A lot of new parents come to breastfeeding with the assumption that this is natural, it is supposed to happen, and I should be able to do this. And when it doesn't feel right, when it feels awkward, when it feels painful, it's very easy to personalize and say, I'm doing something wrong, where most often you just don't have any frame of reference or understanding.
Welcome to What You Didn't Expect in Fertility, Pregnancy, and Birth. This is a show that shares true experiences of getting pregnant, being pregnant, and giving birth to help shift the common cultural narrative away from the glossy depictions of this enormous transition you can find on all kinds of media to a more realistic one. It also celebrates the incredible resilience and strength it takes to create another person and release that new person from your body into the world. I'm your host, Paulette Kamenica. I'm a writer and an economist and the mother of two girls. And boy, did I struggle with this transition. In today's episode, we hear from a fabulous lactation consultant who answers all kinds of questions. What are the physical changes that have to happen to be able to breastfeed? Is breastfeeding supposed to hurt? And if so, how much? Is there a genetic component to breastfeeding? We talk about all these issues and more. Here's our conversation. Today, we're lucky to have Jennifer Suffin, a certified ICLC, which of course stands for Internationally Board Certified Lactation Consultant, on the show. She established her private home practice in 2008 and has helped thousands of families through hospital-based postpartum lactation support, office visits, facilitating support groups, teaching classes, and speaking at perinatal-related events. Welcome to the show, Jennifer. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Do you want to add anything to this very brief resume I've suggested?
That pretty much says it all. I do practice in the San Francisco Bay Area, but that is pretty much how long I've been doing it, and I've been loving it ever since I started.
Okay, so my first question is, how does someone find a lactation consultant? What should they be looking for? Is it a particular qualification, or is it just a temperament match or a perspective match?
Probably a combination of some of those things that you just mentioned. I think because we have the benefit of the interwebs, it's pretty easy to find someone local to you just by searching for a lactation consultant near me. There's also the organization, the International Lactation Consultants Association, and there's a Find a Lactation Consultant in Your Area on that website, and that would ensure that someone has the IBCLC credential, which is, some would say, the gold standard credential in regards to breastfeeding support because of the amount of education that we need to go through, as well as clinical hours and an extensive exam in order to be certified as an IBCLC. But the majority of clients that I see are either referred to me by former clients or some pediatricians, some doulas. It's the grassroots experience, which is one of the things I like. I enjoy meeting people who have come to me through other people that I've helped.
Is this the kind of work you can do over Zoom?
There are lots of lactation consultants who do work over the internet, virtual consultations. There are some organizations that provide virtual consultations for their employees through a few different organizations that provide the lactation consultants, I would say. I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, but there are some people that really prefer doing consults over the internet, and there are definitely some things that you can get support with over the internet. I never really chose to do anything virtual initially because I really feel like the work that I do is very high touch, not only physically in terms of helping someone breastfeed and examining the baby and examining the breast, but there's an emotional intangible piece that I think can only be achieved when you're actually sitting with someone in their presence physically. At least for me, that's how I feel most connected to my work. But given the pandemic and wanting to be able to help as many people as possible, and also to continue my business, I did pivot for a period of time to doing some lactation consultations online and was able to find a good rhythm in order to be able to get people almost all of the things that they would need in order to get their feeding experience off to a good start. But I am really grateful that we're now allowed to be back in person again, and I no longer have to wear a mask. Of course, I always offer families if they would prefer that I wear a mask, but it's nice to have that ability to smile in person. So I prefer to be in person, but for certain situations, I still do virtual consultations. For example, I'll do prenatal consultations online. That's pretty simple to do that way, or going back to work or weaning or pumping. Conversations can be held online if we're not having to do a lot of work with latch and evaluating if a baby has a strong or weak suck or any challenges there. If we're not working in that direction, or if I don't need to do test weights, we can get a lot of things done virtually.
Okay, that's good news, because if you live in a big metro area, probably you have many people to choose from, but if you don't, it might be a little bit tricky. So it's nice to know that there's still things you can get in the online space for lactation care.
It absolutely makes it more accessible to a lot more people, which is amazing.
So one of the things I wanted to talk about is all the changes that have to happen physically to be able to breastfeed. When I looked it up, I was astounded by how complicated it actually is. How many things have to come together to make it work?
I mean, we could go back to like being in utero as a fetus, honestly. The types of things that start to develop in the mammary area, it's definitely something that starts way back then. And then, of course, when you go through puberty, your first menses, there's some things that are going on in the mammary tissue that would potentially help you later on in life to breastfeed.
Wait, what's happening in puberty?
What's actually happening in puberty?
Yeah.
Well, you know how a young person's breast would start to grow. At that period of time, the connections and the tissues are being formed that will eventually become the glandular tissue that is needed for making breast milk, right? So that even starts in puberty. And then as a person matures, their tissue starts to develop. And then we get a big hit during pregnancy. And this is hormonally driven, but breasts do start to change and develop a little bit more in pregnancy. There's, again, growth of that glandular tissue and some ductal pathways being met. And then ultimately, when we deliver the placenta, that is the point where your body starts to understand how to make copious amounts of milk. We start making milk in pregnancy, early in pregnancy, some would say as early as 10 weeks, depending on what study you read. So we start making colostrum very early. But when we go through the delivery of the placenta, that's when our body gets the message to start making milk. And interestingly enough, in the first several weeks of breastfeeding, your body is still making tissue and building some of those connections. And that is very much associated with frequency of feeds, effectiveness of feeds. You're almost priming yourself for the longer term of breastfeeding if things can get off to a good start initially. And of course, there's also sometimes some challenges. There's some medical issues in mom's history, fertility issues. There's a lot of things that can affect our ability to lactate or to have enough milk. But when you're able to work with a lactation consultant early on, or even in pregnancy, we can often sort some of those challenges and help parents figure out the best way to feed their baby with their individual situation.
That's super interesting. It's so cool to me that the placenta is the switch for your body, telling it that it needs to start really producing milk. And I'm wondering if people have issues with their placenta, either in the pregnancy or in delivery, where after the baby's born, the placenta won't detach on its own and you need the OB to intervene. Does that mess with the process?
Yeah. So that's a great question, because typically there can be some conditions in pregnancy, a low-lying placenta, in terms like, you know, placenta previa, that's where the placenta is laying in an unusual place inside of the uterus. But typically what would affect lactation is incomplete delivery of a placenta, because your body hasn't gotten the message that all the placental tissue is gone. If there's still some placental tissue left, your body might not yet start to make copious amounts of milk. And that can happen for all sorts of reasons during the delivery process. In fact, one of the questions that I ask all of my clients is, what is your bleeding level? What is your vaginal bleeding level at this point when we're meeting? Because if moms are having excessive blood flow or passing large clots, it very well could mean that they have some retained placenta that needs to be removed. And it's not that common, but I've certainly seen it over the years I've been in practice. So that would be one of the things that I would advise anyone who's just recently given birth. Typically, post-birth vaginal bleeding will end around the 3-week mark postpartum. It can last a little bit longer, but if moms are still bleeding several weeks after that, that also can be, and having problems with milk supply, that can be a reason why we would investigate.
Everyone says that breastfeeding is quote unquote supposed to hurt. So I'm wondering, A, if that's accurate, and B, if it is accurate, what's the sign that it's lasting too long?
Well, that's another great question, because I think that there's so many mixed messages that people can get about breastfeeding overwhelmingly. And it's often informed by anyone who's giving the advice, their individual experience, whether it's a nurse who has seen plenty of people go through an experience and they have their own experience, or it's a doula, or even someone like myself, or an OBGYN, or I even hear pediatricians, you know, giving a lot of input. The truth is, there may be some initial discomfort with a baby that is breastfeeding well. The tissue itself hasn't been used in that way. It hasn't been drawn into an infant's mouth with the type of sucking that a baby would be doing. It's quite different than usually what you would experience during any sexual play or anything like that. And so for that reason, there's often some level of, this is a different sensation and it can be uncomfortable initially for parents. And in the first 2 weeks is usually when I say to moms, listen, if it's hurting you, I would love for it to subside after the first 10 to 20 seconds after the baby has initially latched. You get that initial kind of like, and you're curling your toes. I want that to subside within 10 to 20 seconds. And thereafter, after that 2 week mark, hopefully you're not necessarily having that sensation of pain. But there's lots of reasons why that pain can continue. And that will often be related to how well the baby is latching. Unfortunately, it's not super, super intuitive for people to know how to latch a baby. And the analogy that I often use is when we hear music come on the radio and it's a song we really like, our bodies will often move to the music just instinctually. We'll start to move to the music. But if you want to learn the steps to the fancy dance that goes along with that song, it takes some practice. And because we now live in a culture and a time in our history where we live very disparate lives from our family members and our close friends, we're in different parts of the country, different parts of the world, we no longer have the benefit of that community and, dare I say, village culture where you're watching people take care of their babies, all different age children, nursing babies, sharing the nursing responsibilities of babies, learning what the wide range is of normal. It's just not part of our daily vernacular. And so a lot of new parents come to breastfeeding with the assumption that this is natural, it is supposed to happen, and I should be able to do this. And when it doesn't feel right, when it feels awkward, when it feels painful, it's very easy to personalize and say, I'm doing something wrong, where most often you just don't have any frame of reference or understanding. I don't care how many breastfeeding classes you've taken. That's not a great replacement for the actual learning that very often is hands-on or close proximity, and we just don't have that. So I get to take the place of that a little bit, even though I'm not spending hours and hours and hours every single day with a mom. I really make sure that the focused time that I spend with families is addressing their most pressing needs, so we can get things moving in a direction and can continue to support further beyond that. But so I don't know if that answers your question about pain, but ultimately there might be some pain in the initial stage, but I would like it to subside within 10 to 20 seconds. And certainly if there's any damage to the nipples, cracks, compression that you see on the nipple, chapping that's really painful, or even open wounds, which some women can get, we definitely want to take a look in that situation, because that's probably not going to resolve too well on its own without a little bit of intervention.
I just interviewed a woman who was saying that she expected it to hurt, and the first month it did hurt, and she felt, if I just get through the first month, I'll be fine. And then the second month hurt more, which doesn't seem like the trajectory you want to be on.
No, typically no. Yeah. And hopefully there's some resources in the community. Again, there's all different kinds of resources too. There's free resources out there that people can tap into. Hospitals will have an outpatient resource where people can go see a consultant. There's office visits that people can do, sometimes even within their pediatric practice. And then someone like myself, who does private home visits. That's another option for people. And there's also breastfeeding support groups and even online support groups if you can't access it. So hopefully people are able to access some level of care that can help guide them in those situations. But as a new mom myself, I was not a lactation consultant when I became a mom the first time. I didn't even know that I could reach out for help. I wasn't aware that this is probably not the way it's supposed to be, because again, we have no frame of reference. And I didn't know that there were people out there that were available to help me. And quite honestly, sometimes there's a sense of, I don't need help. I can figure this out on my own. And also people might have perceptions of how a lactation consultant is going to come in and dictate that they're doing something wrong or that they should be doing things a certain way. And that would also make people afraid to reach out for support. I really, really, I pride myself on the concept that basically I think is the overriding concept that I like to follow when I'm working with families. It's happy family, happy baby. I'm not here to tell anybody there's a right way to do things or a wrong way to do things. I'm here to provide information and support and give options so parents can really make choices on their own, as opposed to feeling like there's one doctrine that's being pushed or a level of judgment that's being measured. That's really not the case in my practice. And I hope that families are finding more and more lactation consultants out there who have a similar philosophy, so parents really can feel okay about reaching out for help.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because there are currents in the larger breastfeeding community that have really strong opinions. And people who have trouble with breastfeeding feel judged or like they're doing it wrong. And maybe they are. Maybe they don't have a good latch because they don't know what they're doing. And it's exactly as you described. A lot of people don't realize that they need help because they've never done it before with their first. So I'm glad you said that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are there foods or supplements that you recommend to aid in breastfeeding or anything to stay away from?
Yeah, I do think it's important, again, from a balanced perspective. I really also don't want moms to feel that if I eat this, it's going to make things all better, right? Only because there's so much pressure that we put on ourselves regardless when we give birth to a baby. It's like we want the very, very best for the baby. And sometimes our altruism doesn't allow us to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. So it's really easy to step into the realm of, I need to take this supplement and I need to eat this food and I need to be this measured about how often I'm feeding and I can't deviate from any of this because I want to be perfect for my baby. So I do think that there are some foods that are supportive, but I don't think that they're the be all end all what's going to make or break your experience. An easy one that I think has a lot of benefits for moms postpartum is oatmeal. Oatmeal has tremendous benefits for milk supply. It also does some really good things for your metabolism throughout the day and your blood sugar levels. And when you are so exhausted and tired, taking care of the newborn, sometimes getting that oatmeal in the morning is just going to help level you out for a big part of the day. So I definitely feel like that one is easy enough to incorporate. Sometimes you can make that in a large batch one day and put small containers in the fridge that you can just eat every day. There's overnight oat options. So I think that oatmeal is a really, really good one to start with. I think that a brewer's yeast, if you want to throw that into a smoothie, that's another one that's really good. But even just eating a real good, varied diet, lots of colors, lots of vegetables and fruits and balanced protein and carbohydrates is really going to get you far. And there's not a lot you have to avoid in food-wise. They used to years and years and years ago tell moms that all they could eat was boiled chicken and rice, which does not make for an exciting postpartum experience, especially those who haven't been eating certain foods during pregnancy. So now we want families to have a wide variety of foods. In fact, there is some evidence that if you eat lots of different flavors and colors and in your regular diet, the infant actually gets to taste some of those flavors through the breast milk. And later on, when it's time for them to start eating solid foods, they may be happier trying new and varied foods because they have the exposure to different flavors, as opposed to an infant who's never tasted anything besides boiled chicken and rice. So those are some things that I think would be supportive in terms of foods. A few things we want to avoid in large quantities. Again, it's not like you're not going to eat any sort of peppermint ever, but large quantities of peppermint are probably going to affect your supply, as would large quantities of sage. But again, a little sprinkling of this here or there is not going to break the supply. And I don't know a lot of people who are eating a lot of sage on a large volume basis. Again, a little garnish is not a big deal. So those are a couple of the things that you would want to potentially avoid in large quantities. And you can also take some herbs. There's a lot of herbs that are used, for example, in like South Asian cooking kind of things, that often when they're cooked into meals are fantastic, but you can sometimes get them in capsule form or a tincture form that can help with your supply. Depending on where you are in your experience with breastfeeding, it's often helpful to get a little bit of advice from a consultant onto which ones would be better. It's not that they're harmful, but we don't want to risk having an oversupply either, because there's a lot of problems that can occur with that. So we want to be measured about how we're employing any sorts of herbs in large quantities. And there's also some arguments could be made that there's not a lot of hard research on herbal supplements. And so we want parents to be aware of that. There can be some interactions with certain health conditions that we want to be aware of with some of the herbs. So using those in conjunction with a consultant is not a bad idea to make sure that we're getting the right formulations for the right situation.
This is totally helpful. So one thing I noticed on your website is that you work with families trying to breastfeed, but also families that are bottle feeding. Is that unique in the lactation consultant world?
I hope not. I believe that there's not one right way to feed a baby. I think that the most important thing is that we feed the baby. And in some cases, if breastfeeding is not working, again, if mom is in very tremendous pain, if the baby is not able to transfer milk, if the baby's falling asleep really easily on the breast, we have to find alternative methods to feed a baby. And quite honestly, it's a reasonable choice to feed babies with bottles too, because it does afford a little bit more routine and rhythm. And for some parents, they can't get their feet underneath them until they have a little bit of sleep. And in some cases, again, we want to be measured about how we work that into the plan. It can be a lifesaver for parents in many ways. And so when I approach my work from happy family, happy baby, there's a lot of families that for one reason or another were utilizing bottle feeding. And in a conscientious way, to make it easier to go between the breast and the bottle, if a family is doing breastfeeding along with bottle feeding. But I also work with families who are doing exclusive bottle feeding, whether it's with pumped breast milk or formula or both. And that is a reasonable choice as long as they're enjoying their baby, enjoying their time getting to know their baby and feeling like they're starting to solidify as a family. That's extremely valuable beyond just making sure you're providing breast milk for your baby. The comprehensive view, I think.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So I have two more questions. The first one is, do we know if there's any genetic component to the ability to breastfeed? If your mother or your sister could do it, should you expect to be able to do it? Or do we know how pregnancy hormones affect breastfeeding ability? Is it the case that everyone's unique?
I would venture to say it's everyone is a unique case because the system is a dyad. It's not just the mom or the lactating parent. You're in a situation where you're at the very least working in a dyad system. Sometimes it's a triad if there's two babies or even more babies. And of course, the partner in the situation is also part of that mix. And there's so many nuances in regards to how we make breastfeeding work that maybe one piece of the puzzle is a parent, a grandmother was able to breastfeed or grandmother wasn't able to breastfeed physically. Maybe that has a little bit, because glandular tissue can develop similarly for this mom and her daughter. That is definitely a piece of the puzzle. But because there's so many factors, including how much support the family gets, including if it's positive, if the family is pro-breastfeeding or pro-bottle feeding, it really, really is so nuanced. I think it's what makes my work so exciting. I will see themes that repeat themselves with people, but each individual family that I get to meet has their own unique situation. And I really, really appreciate that and want to give the families that I see their own individual experience and plan that's going to reflect their challenges and their hope. So I think that that's probably how to approach the idea of, oh, well, my mom had a terrible time breastfeeding. Am I going to have the same? And I would say maybe, because maybe your mom's not going to be the best support in that area. She might not give you all the positive messages that you need. And maybe she wasn't able to breastfeed. Similar to my mom, a generation or two ago, there was no support. She was the youngest of her friends to have kids, the first one to have kids. And by the time I was 2 weeks old, she was done breastfeeding because she, quote unquote, couldn't do it. But it's hard to say why, you know? So I think that that's probably the best way to answer that question, is that there's so many factors that go into it that I think going in with an open mind and gaining some knowledge and getting some level of support is going to be your best bet to help things go the way that you're hoping for. And if we need to shift gears and start to think of like reality versus expectations, I choose to support people not to look at it as a failure or I'm not doing something right. I'm not able to do this. It's more like, okay, this is what your situation is. And we're going to find a way for you to enjoy your baby and to get that closeness that you might experience from that breastfeeding in a different way, or maybe in an altered way, so that you can still feel that connectedness if it feels so important to you.
That's such a good answer. And you kind of answered my next question. You bring all these people into the picture. It's not just the mom, but often a lot of lactating people describe themselves as the only element that is critical. So if it's not working, it's because something about them or their body is broken. And it's exactly the same in delivery, where people blame themselves for a delivery that doesn't look the way they want it to. And I'm often quick to say, well, you get to choose some of it, but the baby's choosing a lot of it, and you have no control over that. But the dynamic is much more obvious in breastfeeding.
Yeah, I do think that there's like an innate piece to this, right? We would not have been able to perpetuate the human race had not lactating people who've given birth been able to breastfeed their babies, right? We didn't have bottles several hundred years ago. And a lot of times, if people weren't able to breastfeed, maybe that baby was not able to make it, you know? So I think that there's this innate drive and desire to be able to breastfeed your baby. But I also know that we no longer live in those times. And we have other obligations and other lifestyles that really sometimes are opposed to exclusive all the time breastfeeding. The gestational parent, but a lactating parent has this like, I need to do things perfectly. And this is the way that my body is meant to do it. And if I can't do it, then I'm failing. There's something wrong with me. And again, I just think that we're just not able to support our new parents in the way ideally they should be supported, to learn those things that they need to learn and to understand that it's not a failure on their part if they're having challenges or if they have to move on to a different way to feed a baby. It's just the reality of their individual situation. And if they get the right support, emotional support around that, and a redirection of how to see this as a positive experience, then most of them are able to integrate that and start to move forward, at least the families that I work with. And again, that's an important piece of what I do, is making sure that families are feeling like they're okay with what's going on and how they're moving forward, regardless of how that looks.
That's so hopeful. I so appreciate your message and all your insights. I learned a lot in the short time we've been together. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And how do people find you?
Well, you can find me at careinthecurve.com. If you Google my name, Jennifer Suffin, you can also find me that way. And probably the easiest way is those two. Yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. This has really been a pleasure for me.
Thanks again to Jennifer for all her great tips. I hope you heard something that can be helpful in your experience of breastfeeding. If nothing else, that help is available and it's okay to seek it out. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please share it with friends. We'll be back next week with another inspiring story.